Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. I promised you I was going to record on Tuesday. It is Wednesday night at 10:52. I got an extra day of work that I was not anticipating last week that wiped me out the day of the Oscar nominations and the Hall of Fame results, but I'm here today and we're going to talk. So I'm going to start with the Hall of Fame stuff because I don't know how much time the Oscar stuff is going to eat up. So we got three new Hall of Famers on top of Jim Leland, who was elected by the Veterans Committee, Adrian Beltre, Joe Maurer, and Todd Helton. Beltre, no surprise, first ballot Hall of Famer. Maurer kind of got in on the skin of his teeth, by skin of his teeth on the first try, which is nice for him. And Todd Helton made it on his sixth try. This is really cool. I feel like the last however many years, 3 years or so, it's been a lot of like one-person classes or two-person classes, and I think a lot of that had to do with the Bonds and Clemens of it all. You know, they sort of ate up a lot of space and time there. But yeah, it's cool to have like a nice actual like full class, like three people plus Jim Leland. That's gonna be like a nice ceremony. Billy Wagner, got a feel for the guy. He missed by 5 votes. I mean, he's probably going to get there next year, but you don't want to be in the position where you got to try and do it in your last year, even by that small of a margin. Like, oh man, it sucks. And he's just like one of the greatest relievers of all time, but because we don't value relievers, like, and this is my problem with him. I'll get into this a little bit later. They're doing the same shit to K-Rod. Like, they're relievers. They do their job great. Like, K-Rod, Wagner, obviously Rivera, what's his name? Oh, I can't believe I'm blanking on this. Trevor Hoffman is in there. But, like, I don't know. I'm, like a low-key, like, maybe John Franco should be in there. That's just because I like a little bit of fun. You know, let him go. Let him bring the mobsters with him. It'll be fine. But, yeah, hopefully Billy Wagner gets in next year because, you know, he'll probably, if he doesn't get in next year, he'll probably be elected by Veterans Committee. But again, you don't want to have to get to that position. Now, who did get to that position is Gary Sheffield. He fell off the ballot. He missed by about 11-12%. Yeah, it's one of those things. I guess it's like the steroids questions of it all, which I don't know that there's ever been as much evidence against him as there was against, you know, Bonds and Clemens and you know, we're seeing now A-Rod and stuff like that. It's a very weird time for the Hall of Fame because they're still having to deal with all of this stuff that never came before. But yeah, it's one of those things. Will the Veterans Committee save him? There's really no way of knowing. I mean, last year they built the Veterans Committee, or 2 years ago, to just, in a way that should have gotten Curt Schilling in, no problem. And then it didn't, right? And he wasn't a steroid guy, but he was a, we'll say, very unlikable figure, and a huge asshole is another way to put it. And they also didn't touch Barry Bonds and Clemens. Like, that was just, it's one of those things. I don't know if the Veterans Committee will save him, because if there's a reputation around baseball that he did this stuff, it's one thing for the writers. I think what you're going to start seeing is the fans who say, well, they're great no matter what, isn't the way the players view them. I think some of the players on these committees might view them as, how dare they do this and, you know, get that great falsely and sort of screw up the rest of us, you know? But, yeah, Gary Sheffield is going to try for the Veterans Committee. David Wright cleared 5. He got 6.2%. So cleared 5%. He's going to make it through to another year. I feel like David Wright will really benefit if he can hang around on this ballot. If he can gain a little bit after a little bit, I feel like he's going to benefit from like the push to get Don Mattingly in the Hall. You know what I'm saying? Because they have like very similar careers and arcs and stuff like that. And I think if the voting can change to sort of more of a peak, like allowing more peak guys in, I think that would help Wright get in. Beltran gained just under 11%, so he's now just a little, I think he's like 17.9% away, basically 18% away. That's great. If he's gaining, if he gained 11% in the second year, and he gains 11% next year, he'll be in 2 years. I think he's going to make slightly smaller gains. I feel like it's going to take like 3 or 4 years, but it could happen sooner. So that's really fun. I'm going to try and get up there when he gets in, because it's one of those things that, like, yeah, the Astros stuff, obviously terrible. But also, he was one of, if not my favorite player when I was a kid. Of course, I got to be there for that. Jose Reyes sucks to suck. He was one of two players who got no votes. One of only two players to get no votes. It warms my heart to see domestic abusers fall off the ballot, not get into the Hall of Fame, which is why this year's results also made me feel so warm about Andrew Jones and Omar Vizquel, both of whom should not see the Hall due to Andrew Jones threatened to kill his wife. Omar Vizquel obviously had the domestic violence and had the sexual harassment and abuse of a autistic child. So yeah, I don't think either of them need to be in there either. This is my thing with, like, Bonds and Clemens, too, is, like, yeah, and Pete Rose, yeah, the other stuff they did, bad. I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, steroids is fine, oh, cheating, like, betting on the game, that's fine. I don't think that's fine. But also, these men are terrible people. They're domestic abusers, statutory rapists, like, we can't... Barry Bonds did not commit statutory rape. Or was alleged to commit statutory rape that I know of that was directed at Roger Clemens in his with Mindy McCready and Pete Rose transporting minors across state lines. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like I'm not going to be able to get behind it. Looking ahead next year, we've already started talking about next year. Kind of Oscar-like in that way. Ichiro and CeCe Sabathia are going to be on the ballot. Probably both of them get in first ballot. I mean, they're just two legends of the game. And Curtis Granderson's on the ballot too, which will be a fun little moment. I don't think he gets in, but you know, he'll probably get like a decent chunk of votes. He might get like 5%. He might stick around for a second year. 2026 is going to be very interesting because it's Cole Hamels and Ryan Braun are the big names. And like, Braun's going to have that A-Rod Manny stink on him of, like, they clearly do not want to vote for anyone who broke those rules, you know? And Braun was not nearly as good as the two of them. And Hamels, like, he could conceivably stick around long enough to do it. I don't know that he does, but, like, he could. I could see it with Cole Hamels. After Maurer, Posey seems like a surefire thing in 26. And Lester, again, John Lester feels like he could be, like, sort of an intriguing guy to watch grow his votes over years, if he can stick around after that first year. 2028 is the year of Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina, which is really fun. They'll probably both, I think they both get in together, which is really, that's, like, cool. That's just cool, you know. 2029, Miggy. I mean, that's, like, we're looking down the road. This is 5 years from now. You get on the ballot after 5 years after retiring. So Miggy will be on the ballot in 5 years. He's going to first ballot. Adam Wainwright could have an intriguing case. I don't know that it happens, but like there's an intriguing enough case that I think like it could. I also want to just say, because there was all this talk with Beltre and we had the same talk about, you know, Jeter and Griffey and everything like that. You have to realize that these voters are very, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this, mercurial, in that their decisions and logic sometimes make no sense is how they vote. Sometimes you look at a guy, you go, of course, he's got 3,000 hits, bunch of home runs, great defender, Adrian Beltre. Long storied career across multiple franchises. And you're going to get one guy who goes, this is one of those advanced analytics fellas that I hear all about, so I won't be voting for him. He has 3,000 hits. What are you talking about, pal? But they'll just make up their own stories. So, like, Ichiro, I think he should be unanimous. Like, because, like, the idea of unanimous to me, at least, is, like, everyone should look at him and go, yeah, this is a Hall of Famer. But you're going to get someone, and I know this is going to happen because I know that people who vote on this are so dumb. Someone's going to look at him and go, no rings. And that's going to be their reasoning for not voting for him. Like, I need you to prepare for that. They're going to say, no rings, you know? I think the funniest, I'm trying to think of, like, reasons, the stupid reason people vote for them. I think the funniest one could be CC Sabathia if someone doesn't vote for him and says, listen, the reason why I didn't vote for him, he was good when he was fat, bad when he was skinny. Like, that seems like something someone would say that's so bananas. Buster Posey, doesn't have a ton of counting stats, right? Like, that would be a thing. Pujols, this one seems clear to me. Fell off once he went to LA. Right? That's clear. That feels clear to me. Yachty, great defender, not the best hitter. That's going to be clear. Miggy, I feel like the case someone's going to make to not vote for him is that, yes, he won a World Series with the Marlins, but when he came to Detroit, he was never able to do it for them. Completely ignoring the fact that, like, baseball is a true team sport and one person cannot drag a team to a you know, championship in the way that, like, a smaller sport, like maybe basketball, you could, right? Can't do that. Does not matter. Miggy should have. Like, this is going to be banana. We're going to get some real, like, brain rot takes for some of these guys. It's going to be great. And then I just want to close with how I would have voted. I think from how I've spoken about this and how I've spoken about these people in the past, it should be pretty clear. I would have voted for Adrian Beltre, Carlos Beltran, Todd Helton, Joe Mauer, K-Rod. I would have voted for K-Rod. I think he's good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. I think the fact that he's kind of stuck around like 7% right now sucks. Wagner. I would have voted for David Wright. You know, he got 6%. I'm not making or breaking anything here. I'm just keeping him on the ballot. I'd vote for him. And maybe I'd vote for Gary Sheffield. I actually feel like Gary Sheffield, I would have this stupid reasoning where I just find his son so annoying that I just wouldn't want to vote for him. But, you know, we all have those stupid, we're all mercurial in our own way. Yeah, so that's all the coverage I got. I kind of sped through that because I'm going to have a lot on the Oscar segment. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into it. Okay, and we're back. So, the Academy Award nominations came out Tuesday morning yesterday. I woke up early. I have been tired ever since. And I didn't even, it's not even that early. I woke up at 8 o'clock, but like my body's just not used to that. And I didn't get enough sleep the night before. Hear me yawning. Because of that. I've been tired the last 2 days all day. So I'm going to go through like the good, the bad, the like what the hell slash. I call it like, I'm thinking of it like the what the hell slash the, that's just Oscars being Oscars. And the ugly. And there's one in the ugly. So the good. May December got in for screenplay, which is so much fun. So glad that May December has won. Because that's all I got. We'll get into that in a minute. Obviously Oppenheimer got a million nominations, Killers got a million nominations. Anatomy of a Fall got a bunch of nominations. Got more than I think I was anticipating for, which is great. Kind of looking like nothing's going to beat Oppenheimer, but kind of looking like if there was like a top five, it might have snuck in there, you know, with that director nomination. So cool for Justine Triet. So cool. That movie is so good, and she did such a good job with that movie. Colman Domingo getting nominated. The first leading actor nominee since Ian McKellen in Gods and Monsters in 1998 to be an out LGBTQ actor playing an out LGBTQ character or person. Both of them were real people. And then the same thing, Jodie Foster and Colman Domingo made history as the first time the two openly LGBTQ actors won for playing openly LGBTQ characters. I'm saying that from the Variety article. I love the Andrew Scott quote from one of the actors roundtables that they did where he was like, he took issue with the phrase openly gay, because you only ever see it said in media. Like, no one introduces someone at a party. It's like, this is my openly gay friend, Steve. Like, you just, if you say anything, you say, like, this is my gay friend, Steve, but even that feels weird, right? But, like, even if I was discussing someone with someone, I wouldn't say, like, oh, my friend is openly gay. I would just say my friend is gay. So, like, I get it. It's funny. I think that's really funny. You know, you don't say openly Irish, you don't say openly left-handed. Like, that was his point. I think that's really true. Anyway, Mission Impossible scored the franchise's first and second Oscar nomination. Think about that. Franchise has been around for almost 30 years at this point, which is crazy in its own right. It just now got its first and second nominations. It got in for, I believe, I don't have the list in front of me, I believe it was visual effects and, why am I guessing? I literally hit the page open 5 seconds ago. I can just go back to it. 96th Academy Awards. We're coming in on 100 people. Like, this is big time now. So sound and visual effects. Super cool. That franchise has deserved recognition for a long time, and that rocks. And then finally, in the good, the potential of Ryan Gosling performing I'm Just Ken at the Oscars, because he got nominated, and I genuinely don't know who else you get to, like, that song kind of loses its oomph if it's not him, which, I want to say this, and I'll bring this up again later, that's a good song. I'm sick of this, like, oh, it's not a good song, that's a good song. We'll get into this later, why people are saying that, but, like, that is genuinely a good song and a good sequence, and Ryan Gosling did a good job and, like, deserves to be nominated. Just gonna say that. The bad. I was not a fan of Maestro, and especially not a fan of its screenplay, and its screenplay got nominated in original screenplay, so that was one where I went, oh, God. And then in the other screenplay category, dead screenplay, tough category, especially once they moved Barbie in, but, Killers of the Flower Moon missed, and Killers of the Flower Moon felt like one that had a really good shot at winning that category, which sucks now, but happens. It was such a strong year for movies, and again, I'll get into this later. You can't get mad at this year. There's so many, like, there's one movie, I haven't seen two of the movies nominated for Best Picture, American Fiction, Zone of Interest. I'm planning on seeing both of them this week. Of the other eight, there's one I would take out. This is such a strong lineup. This is such a good year for movies, and I think it's hard to tell that in the moment. Like, I think once you get 5 years down the line, you can see, like, oh, okay, like, this has stuck, you know, stuff like that. But, like, this is such a good year. Anyway, a little upset Killers missed. You can't get too mad at it. I can get mad at Greta Lee missing Best Actress. Left you in anticipation there. Bet you thought I was talking about a different Greta. But yeah, Greta Lee, we'll get into who she missed for, but fifth slot should have been hers. The other four spots in that category are, like, I could take or leave Carrie Mulligan just because I think she does that good of work constantly and she's done better. Like, that's, like, kind of felt like she was kind of, like, you know, she could do that in her sleep. Not that it wasn't good, just that, like, you know, there's better. Fallen Leaves, which I saw, like, a week or two ago, Missed International. I thought that was a really superb, like, little movie that it would have been such a nice entry. It would have been nice to see it get an Oscar nomination. It missed. I actually have now seen none of the, I was assuming I was going to have seen at least one with Fallen Leaves, but I've seen none of the international nominees, so I got to catch up on stuff. That also, you know, thank you to the French government for not choosing Anatomy of a Fall for political reasons, and then the movie that you chose over it not getting nominated while Anatomy of a Fall got 5. Great job, idiots. The one that really broke my heart, first one of the day, right off the bat, broke my heart. Charles Melton, we failed you. He should be winning this category. He should be winning this category, and he's not even there. It's like, it's on the one hand, it's heartbreaking when a really good performance loses the category, but it's another when it doesn't even make it. And you know it clears everything in that category. It's just heartbreaking. And then there were films that didn't get any nominations at all, and we'll talk about some of these later. Ferrari, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, All of Us Strangers, The Iron Claw, Asteroid City, Priscilla, Florence on had two songs eligible for song, didn't get either of them in there. it would have been nice to see at least one of those get something in there. I mean, you could probably fix a lot of the problems with this year with some of these other people. You know, plug Kaylee Spaney in somewhere, or Andrew Scott, or the screenplay for All the Stranger. Jeez, Rachel McAdams, Ferrari and sound. Like, it feels so odd. Asteroid City and production design. There's so many spots for these movies, and they're just not there. The what? What are you doing here? Or Oscars doing the Oscar stuff. Annette Bening got into Best Actress. And the thing is like, last year, there was the Andrea Riseborough surprise, right? And well, I won't forget that, because I think she was like I'm trying to think of who else was in that category. She was the third person announced, because it was Ana de Armas. Who was it in that category? Ana de Armas was before her. Michelle Yeoh, Cate Blanchett. So Angela Riseborough would have been the third person. So you got through the first two there. And you're like, okay, this feels normal. And Ana de Armas was the first clue where you went, uh-oh, Daniel Deadwyler's not getting in. Viola Davis isn't getting in. We're on the real brink of some wacky pants stuff going on. And then it hits you. And Annette Bening was number one. She was the first. She is B. She starts that thing off. So you are just thrown. I was thrown for a loop at 8, 45 in the morning. I was not prepared for that. And yeah, that's like, it's so funny to me that people are getting really mad about, and I have to find it because I want to read it. The most unhinged takes on this, where they're throwing out like three of the best nominations and best actors and being like, maybe Margot Robbie should have done this. It's like, Annette Bening is right there. And like, I love Annette Bening, but talk about sleepwalking through a performance. She could do that, in a coma. America Ferrera got in. That feels like genuine, like Oscars being Oscars. She gave a big long speech at Critics' Choice for accepting the See Her Award for being a great woman or something. I don't know. I think it's like a charity thing. Like, not they give it in charity, but like philanthropic activist. I don't know. It's one of those like fake awards that they throw into the middle of the thing that they give to someone who's in a big movie that year. I said this happens. That's what award shows are like. And they saw that and they saw the monologue and they were like, great, let's get her in there. And it's like, Penelope Cruz is right there. And she's heartbreaking your heart. Ugh. Sterling K. Brown got in, which I haven't seen American Fiction. I'm going to go see it tomorrow. I have not seen it. Good for him. He seems like a genuinely great guy. But again, where's Charles Melton? Where's Jeremy Allen White? What are we doing here? One of my least favorite Oscars being Oscars moment is I did not watch the John Batiste documentary because I don't really like him. His music a lot of the time just sounds like old Navy music to me, and like, more power to him, that ain't for me. So he had the documentary and they were like, oh, it's gonna get nominated, and I was like, okay, but like, I'm not gonna watch until I have to. And then gets into Best Song and I'm like, okay, there it is. And that doesn't get into documentary. And it's like, you had to nominate it in this other category. And you didn't even do it in the one that it was like really being pushed. What are we doing here? And now I have to watch this stupid documentary. I have to watch it, the movie about the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Because they can't stop nominating Diane Warren. Luckily, listen, I like the Indiana Jones movies. So I'm okay with that. But this goes into the Diane Warren thing too, and the John Batiste thing, because they can't stop giving that man awards, and they can't stop giving Diane Warren awards, or nominations, not awards. They've never started giving Diane Warren awards. Another John Williams name check nomination. And it's like, Joe Hisaishi, his work with Boy and the Heron is right there. I'm not even the world's biggest Studio Ghibli fan. I was talking to Thomas, who you may know if you read Amazing Avenue or you listen to From Complex Queens. I was talking to Thomas about this. That is my second Studio Ghibli film ever. I've seen Spirited Away. I've seen The Boy and the Heron. That's it. And, oh my god, the score. Best part of the movie. And, nope. Can't get him in. I can be honest, I love the score for Oppenheimer. I think it's great. Ludwig Göransson is great. He already has one. They won it for like 5 years ago, right? Like, Colors of the Flower Moon score is also insane. And Robbie Robertson is dead. He's never getting nominated again, you know? So, like, not to be like that matters more than the work, but like, both pretty great. It's not like we're given, you know, it's not like this is the consolation prize to Bohemian Rhapsody for being like, thanks for, here's your award for film editing because you were a movie that got released in theaters this year and not just a jumble of footage. Like, that's a low bar. This is like, I would just give it to Robbie Rob. Ludwig Göransson's gonna get nominated again. And then The Ugly. And The Ugly was ugly. And it is still ugly. And I gotta find the one that I really want to talk about. But if you've been alive, online, in the world, talking to people, if you saw the list of nominations, you would have seen that people got very angry over the, and I'm doing air quotes here, Barbie snubs of Margot Robbie in Best Actress and Greta Gerwig in Best Director. And don't get me wrong, I think that Greta did a great job. Margot did a great job. If I was doing these nominations, Margot probably would have made it into Best Actress because I wouldn't have Benning. Or, well, if I was doing these nominations, Natalie Portman would be an actress. We'll say that. And Greta Lee. So actually, maybe not. Margot Robbie might not have. It would have been close. She would have been around the mix, you know? I would have really had to sit down and think about it. But the thing that annoys me with the idea of snubs, and again, massive air quotes, snubs, at this level is it's not. It's. They're not sitting there, you know. There's almost 10,000 members of the Academy. They don't get in a room and go, ooh, we hate women. Let's not nominate Greta. Like, this was an incredibly strong year. There were five nominees in Best Director. I've seen four of them. I'm not kicking out any one of those for Greta. And I love Greta Gerwig. Sometimes you can make a great film, be a great director, and not have made one of the best 5 year films of the year, you know? And again, this is coming from someone who, like, I would have given her the world for Lady Bird. And frankly, I think it's Travis Esch was nominated for Little Women for director. She didn't need to get in this year. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. And the way that this has exploded into the Hillary Clinton tweet that shook the world of her saying that she knows what it's like to have the most, you know, be the biggest of the year, but still not take home the gold. Clearly talking about winning the popular vote, but not the Electoral College, which, like, girl, you should have campaigned harder in some swing states. I don't know what that's you like. What are we doing here? But, like, the way that this turned into the Academy is sexist because they nominated Ryan Gosling and not them. And, like, A, they both got nominated. Margot Robbie got nominated for producing, which, if you listen to the way that most people are talking about, like, this being a travesty because Margot Robbie put in so much work into getting this movie made. Yeah, it's called producing. And she got nominated for that. She's a nominated producer on Barbie. She's nominated for Best Picture because she is a producer on that film. And Greta Gerwig, she was able to take this doll and turn it into this huge story. Yes, it's called writing, which she is nominated for. You know, and Ryan Gosling, what he did on the movie was act. That's what he's nominated for. And the, you know, Margot Robbie, this is misogyny. Like, you do realize the Academy that Margot Robbie got snubbed in is best leading actress. It's all women. She didn't lose out to a man. She lost out to Annette Bening. Like, that's who really the issue is here. And Mary McNamara, who writes for the Los Angeles Times, had this to say. And this is so baffling. If only Barbie had done a little time as a sex worker, that's calling out poor things, or barely survived becoming the next victim of a mass murder plot, which, that's Killers of the Flower Moon. And that's a true story about, like, the genocide of a nation, of a, you know, indigenous nation. It's a true story. Or stood accused of shoving Ken out of the dream house's top window. That's Anatomy of a Fall. Certainly millions of Barbie fans are currently wishing they could push someone, perhaps a member of or two of the Film Academy, out of a very high window. So what I like about that is that's like, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4 sentences. In it, she mocks sex workers and also puts down poor things, which is an incredibly layered performance from Emma Stone. Puts down Killers of Flower Moon, which is about a real-life genocide, and puts down Lily Gladstone, who is the first Native American, and that's American from United States of America, the first indigenous person was Yalitza Aparicio for Roma. First Native American actress, indigenous to the United States, to be nominated for lead actress, and there's a decent shot she wins. Like, it's kind of a dead heat between her and Stone, right? Like, there's a good chance Gladstone wins, especially after the screenplay. And like, kind of feels like if they're going to give the movie any award, they're going to do, like, that's like the representative win, you know, while Poor Things might be able to get now screenplay or something else. Like there'll be a win for it somewhere. And Anatomy of a Fall, which is a much more complicated film, but I think a much more interesting film from the perspective of feminism, which a lot of people are getting mad about Barbie missing in the name of feminism. Anatomy of a Fall is about a woman who is accused of her husband's murder and then goes on this stands trial for this murder where she is basically accused of everything because she was a bisexual woman in an unhappy marriage. And that in and of itself is enough to accuse her of murder, because obviously she would have done it if she could. She was flirting with a woman, and therefore she murdered her husband. Like, it's a really fascinating movie, and I encourage you to check it out. We'll talk about it in a minute, because I'm going to just run down a list of where you can watch some of this stuff. But, yeah, this is so bizarre, and honestly, it's turning Barbie. Every award season has, like, a villain for the award season, you know. And it was kind of Maestro for a while there. And now this has turned, like, a lot of people are not going to get turned off by this. This is reminding me a lot of last year. And it ended up winning Best Picture, but, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once. The directors of that film, the Daniels, had to actually go out and basically tell their fans, like, yeah, thanks, like, thank you for loving the movie, but, like, calm down a little bit, you're getting a little crazy out there. And they might have to do that with the Barbie fans, because, like, this is not normal. Everyone needs to get a grip. This movie made $1 billion and got 8 nominations. It did not get snubbed. The movie that got snubbed was May December for being a mirror to the Academy that just nominated 1 million of these types of biopics. That basically saying, like, what are we even doing here? You're fucking morons. Like, that's the movie that got snubbed. They gave it its lone, like, screenplay nomination that, like, every year I feel like there's one movie they nominate for screenplay and, like, fine, we'll nominate for this because you're good, but we don't actually like you. Like, that's what got snubbed, you know? All the Strangers got snubbed. Ferrari got snubbed. Like, it's just, it's so stupid. This whole thing is so stupid. People need to get a grip. They need to get several grips. But of the nominated films, there's some you can watch right now. You can rent Anatomy of a Fall, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning. It's no longer Dead Reckoning Part 1. They cut the Part 1 off. Barbie's on Max. The Holdovers is on Peacock. Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon, both on Apple TV Plus, I believe. Poor Things, American Fiction, Zone of Interest are all still in theaters. And other ones of these movies might pop back up in theaters just because they're now Oscar nominated. It will bring people to the theaters. Indiana Jones is on Disney Plus. I'm only recommending that because I think the movie is a good time, not because I agree with its nomination. And May December's on Netflix. And then there's other movies nominated from this year, which maybe I'll get, like, do an actual, like, full list of at some point, but it's 11:30 at night, and I don't feel like doing that right now. So that's where you can watch those. And then also, I just want to say, AMC, I believe they still do it. They usually do the weekend of the Oscars. You go to the theater, and you watch, like, half and half, or they might do it over 3 days, because some of these movies are incredibly long. But you can watch all the movies over the course of the weekend. My personal choice is Regal does their Best Picture. It used to be the Best Picture Film Festival. They've changed to the Best Picture Showcase. I will always call it the Best Picture Film Festival. The first year was so cool. They gave out, you would go in, you could either buy the ticket separately, and this is true now, you can buy the ticket separately. If you were not a Regal Crown Club member, what is wrong with you? It's free. But if you're not a Regal Crown Club member, I believe the tickets are $7. And I think if you are, they're $6. So you save $1 on each ticket. And then there's a combo that comes with that if you're a Regal Crown Club member. That's like, I think, like $6 for a small popcorn, small drink, which is pretty good. You're paying $12 as opposed to, like, that's like less than one ticket price for a movie. But if you're, I would recommend signing up for Regal Crown Club, and they have, over the course of 10 days leading up to the Oscars, so from March 1st to March 10th, they usually show 3 to 4 movies a day, depending. Last year it was 3 movies a day at different times. So you can sort of mix and match for your schedule, which is great for me, because I like to fit them all in, play schedule Tetris. Yeah, and that's a great way to see all the Best Picture nominees, because the best way to see any of these movies is on the big screen, and I know I sound like hokey when I say that, but it's the truth. Movies are made to be seen on the big screen. And that's the great thing about the movies. Yeah. So thank you for listening to me go on and on. I just did over 20 minutes on the Oscars. I told you I didn't know how long that's going to go. So why don't we take a break and we come back. I'm going to do a somewhat quick movie minute on some non-Oscar nominated films. Okay. And we're back. So, you heard me talk about this, and I'm going to obviously talk more about the Oscars over the coming weeks with the award shows and everything like that. But I just want to quickly recommend some non-Oscar nominated films that I haven't recommended yet from last year. So Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And what else did I list off for? Asteroid City, not going to be there. But I want to just list off. I saw this week All of Us Strangers, which was incredible. Really great movie about, like, grief and loneliness and sort of the desire for connection. It's so gorgeous. Made me, like, cry like a baby. I was leaving the theater. One of the theater employees that I, like, you know, I see them a bunch. She's like, oh, how you like it? I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. Really liked it. I think it was great. I like how every sentence I said there went up and, oh, it's the best movie ever made. And she was like, yeah, really depressing now. And I'm looking at her, and my eyes are, like, rimmed with red because I've been crying the whole time. I'm like, yeah, I would say so. But yeah, All of Us Strangers, which I believe is still in theaters, probably won't be for much longer, especially now that it didn't get any Oscar nominations. But it's really great. Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Claire Foy, Jamie Bell, Andrew Haig, who maybe I'll recommend another one of his movies one time. He's a great filmmaker, super. I just a great filmmaker. There's not much more I can say about him. Ferrari, Michael Mann's classic, or if you ask the lady that I went to see the movie with, my classic. I got thanked for that movie for some reason. I was not involved in the making of it, but I'll take the credit. But yeah, Adam Driver's great, and Penelope Cruz is incredible. There's a crash scene that is so intense, like one of the most intense things I've ever seen on a movie screen. So if you can find it still on the big screen, I would recommend seeing it that way because the sound is incredible. It looked great on the big screen. If not, still watch it at home. It's really good. I think it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. Super, super. Just Adam Driver doing a great Italian accent. Penelope Cruz just doing a great Italian accent. Shailene Woodley is also trying to do an Italian accent. Doesn't work all the time, but you know what? We love her for trying. The Iron Claw. I'm just recommending the most heartbreaking films here, and it's not getting any better after this. The Iron Claw. I'm sure you've heard of this by now. The wrestling movie about how sad it is when your whole family dies. one of those movies I went to see with my dad, total dad movie. So was Ferrari. The great dad movies. So if you're looking for something to watch with your dad, choose one of those two. Yeah, and my dad, I mean, growing up, my dad told me about the Von Erichs. I always knew about the Von Erichs story. And it was one of those things that, like, I knew what was coming. And it was still like, oh, no. And I could only imagine what it was like. Because the seat was pretty full behind us. We sat in the accessible seating because my, you know, my dad's got a foot problem. And behind us, you could hear people. Just, it was like gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. Great movie. Sean Durkin directed the hell out of it. Zac Efron. Now, there's someone who was snubbed this year. That man, he should have an Oscar. We should be talking, you know, the Riverdale to Oscar pipeline got ruined this week. We should have also been talking about the High School Musical to Oscar pipeline. This was such a good performance. The last scene will shatter your heart into 1,000 pieces. And you'll be so glad you saw it. Priscilla. Incredible. I read the book written by Priscilla Presley, that it was based on Elvis and May. The book is odd. You can tell it's written by someone who isn't really a writer, and then also written by a ghostwriter. Kind of all over the place, but Sofia Coppola really streamlined it. She got like no money to make this movie, which is crazy. Like, they were just like, yeah, we're not gonna give you money. And it's like, she's one of the most successful female directors of all time. And the daughter of literally Francis Ford Coppola, which he also can't get money to make his movies, which should tell you something about the state of filmmaking right now, that we literally can't give Francis Ford Coppola money to make a movie. That man made The Godfather and Apocalypse Now and The Conversation and The Outsiders, and The Cotton Club edit is really good. See, like, this is the thing. He's great. But yeah, it's so good. It's such a great portrait of, like, what it's like to live in the shadow of someone who's famous. And how isolating it can be, and how overbearing it can be for that, because basically you're dealing with all of the pile on from that person's career, plus whatever weird idiosyncrasies they have, and a power dynamic and everything like that. And I think Sofia Coppola was the perfect person to make that story, given again, that is Francis Ford Coppola. So yeah, highly recommend that one. Blackberry, Glenn Howerton saying, I'm from Waterloo, where the vampires hang out, is stuck in my brain. It scratches an itch in there. It's maybe the best, like, How This Got Made movie. You know, like, we're getting a bunch of those now. The Flamin' Hot Cheeto. We're getting one about Pop-Tarts for some reason. Air is up there, too. I'd say Air is probably actually the best, and this is number two. But yeah, How This Got Made. It's got Glenn Howerton. It's got Jay Baruchel. Very Canadian film. It's got Degrassi castmate, if you're interested in that. I know I am. I love when I make a Degrassi spotting. And 1001, which is on Amazon Prime. A lot of these are still somewhat in theaters. Priscilla's going to be on Blu-ray soon, so you can probably rent that one. I know you can rent Blackberry, and that's on DVD. For some reason, no Blu-ray. 1001's on Prime Video. And you can rent it other places. Really incredible movie. First-time filmmaker, A.V. Rockwell. Starring Teyana Taylor in an astounding performance. She should have gotten into Best Actress. I think I probably slotted her in above Margot. Maybe. A mother trying to raise her son in a quickly gentrifying New York. Oh, Teyana Taylor's so good in it. It's heartbreaking. Yeah, I don't want to take up too much of your time. It's already been 43 minutes, but yeah, that's some good, if you're looking for some stuff that didn't get Oscar nominated, it's a good place to start. And yeah, thank you for listening. If you like this show, if you're subscribed to Homer and Applesauce, I assume, but you know, don't want to assume, make an ass out of you and maybe me, that you listen to the other shows on this network, from Complex to Queens, A Pot of Their Own, Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World series, all the wonderful shows we have. And if you like those shows and you like this show, if you go to homerandapplesauce.com, there's going to be a link you can click to the Patreon. I believe it's $5 a month. And for that, you get bonus content, exclusive Patreon exclusive episodes. I think they do playlists sometimes, some other stuff going on there. Yeah, it's a very cool situation. And I would recommend you do that. I would also recommend that you follow us on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. We are at FIBpod, On Instagram, we are at FlushingIsBurningPod, and you can email us at FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you next week. Maybe we'll have some actual Met news. We're only a few weeks away from spring training, which is pretty cool. So maybe we'll get some more stuff coming out.